ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Feeling really thirsty. But my water bottle's empty.
Lisa, it's time to take a break.
I know, but I've got to get this report finished before my 11 o'clock meeting. What am I going to do? Hello, Lisa Leong here for ABC Radio National's This Week in Life, helping to make your work life better. We're taking a break this week, so we've prepared a little refresher for you to contemplate while we're away. Instead of powering through, in this episode, we're taking the time to learn why you should take better breaks at work and how to do it. So grab yourself a cuppa and let's get to it. Kira Shabram is an assistant professor of management and organisation at the Pennsylvania State University. She's been looking into human sustainability at work and has written about work breaks. Welcome, Kira.
Thank you for having me.
Why do we need to take breaks from work, Kira?
We need breaks from work not only because not taking them makes us worse performers, but because it will hurt our well-being. Breaks are inevitable. The question is how and when should you take them?
So can you explain what happens to our physical body when we don't take enough breaks?
Sure. At a basic biological level, our body will slowly start to break down. The analogy I often like to use of our students, it's like maintenance of any infrastructure. It just happens to be your body's. So you can defer maintenance. You can do it for quite a while, actually, while you're focusing on other things. But at some point, you're going to have a catastrophic breakdown. And so the goal is to avoid, if you want to use another metaphor, to keep slipping down that slope until you crash off a cliff. And so breaks help maintain our body, and the best breaks I would label as preventative maintenance rather than corrective maintenance because you've waited too long.
And you have done specific research with animal shelter workers that demonstrates what happens when you don't take breaks. Can you tell us about that?
I would love to. So the reason we did that study with animal shelter workers is that we were really interested in understanding employees who have internal pressure to keep working. So we're well aware of jobs where you have a boss or you have organizational cultures that are just forcing you to work all the time. With animal shelter workers and with a lot of social service workers, yes, there are those external pressures, especially under resource constraints, but a lot of it comes from the inside. A lot of them feel this moral compulsion to keep working, to keep self-sacrificing. And that profession also has a really high turnover rate because of it. So we were interested in understanding who can survive in that profession? Who are the people that 10, 20 years later aren't just working in animal shelters, but have actually risen in the ranks, making a bigger difference, training the next generation? We went into that study assuming that it was the people who cared the most, who described this as their calling, as this deeply meaningful thing that they had to do at all time. And because of that, they could weather all the sacrifice that came with it. And we found the exact opposite. We found the people who survive animal shelter work, and again, not just survive, but they thrive. They're still there 20 years later, now in leadership positions, often at a national level, are the people who started with much smaller expectations. They liked animals, but they just wanted to learn what the work was like. And because of that, we found that they distinguished themselves from other animal shelter workers in two key ways. The first key way is they took breaks. At the end of the day, they clocked off. A lot of them had other hobbies. They'd go fishing on the weekend. They'd be part of a volunteer orchestra. So they would have things outside of work. The second thing is that they tended not to think of themselves as the only one. So a lot of other animal shelter employees thought, I care more than anyone else. I have to keep doing this. And those people thought, no, we're in this together. So I can rely on other people to take over when I clock out. And that really inspired my interest in studying breaks because I hadn't anticipated how important breaks would be to make a pro-social difference, to give yourself permission to clock off in order to then come back the next day and do it all over again.
Fascinating. So I think many of us know that we should take breaks, but we just don't do it. And obviously this is coming out in your research. So what's the main block here, do you think?
So for the animal shelter employees, the main block was internal, right? The sense that I can always give more and always give more. For many of us, it can be that. And then it's usually also a combination of external pressures. So a client, a customer, or boss asking us to give more. And often we have this short-sighted perspective of, sure, if I skip this break, I can get this report out. But we don't think about the fact that, again, we're inching closer towards a cliff and there's no more reports going to be coming out. There's not going to be any more health. So really our emphasis is on, yes, you can push yourself in the short run, but you're really sacrificing not just well-being, but performance in the long run. And so you have to take breaks.
So your research identifies three strategies that workers have for taking breaks. So first up, the very sinister sounding hidden breaks. What are they?
Correct. So strategy number one we find is people recognize they need a break, and they also understand that there's too much pressure for them to look busy, so they feel they have to hide it. So they will go to a bathroom cubicle and hide out and maybe play a video game on their phone, or they'll use technology, Slack, Microsoft Teams, to set themselves as if they were in a meeting when they're really not. So they feel like they have to continue pretending to work, even if they're not busy. Often they are busy, but it's really that pressure to look busy. What we find with hidden breaks is there does not seem to be a single benefit. People don't come back from those breaks feeling more restored, ready to get back to work. Their performance isn't getting any better. And they often express really negative emotions, frustration, guilt, anger, contempt. So these visibility strategies to hide breaks, although they seem to be quite common, are really counterproductive.
Sounds like you'd go to hidden breaks if you're feeling external pressure rather than internal pressure.
100%. It's the pressure to look busy. And we looked at this in a variety of professions. So that pressure could come from a client, for example, in consulting. It could come from a manager. But yes, it is an external pressure to look busy.
Okay. The second strategy for taking breaks, the compromise.
So the compromise is going to directly contradict your introduction, and I hope you'll allow me to make a case for it. Research on breaks for a long time assumed that for a break to be effective, it would have to be a complete break. No work at all. You're only focused on some sort of leisure activity or recovery activity or something completely outside the realm of work. And what we are surprised to learn is that as long as employees have autonomy over their schedule, you let them handle their workflow as they see fit, especially in times of being busy, often they'll work more than you expect them to. So for example, they may front load work. They may say, okay, I'm not going to take a break today, or I'm going to work late into the evening, because then I can take the next 3 days off and not worry about it. Other compromises may be switching to an easier project. So I'm not going to work on this hard report right now, but I don't mind crunching some numbers in Excel, or just sweetening the work, going to a coffee shop or to a park to work. And so again, we thought those are subpar. They're going to have lower performance and lower well-being afterwards. And we found the opposite for both, that compromise strategies really seem to be maximally effective, and individuals aren't just more productive afterwards, they also report greater well-being. And we think the key there is the autonomy, that if my boss is making me take, let's say, this radio interview on a Sunday, I'm going to be really resentful. But if I can schedule my own time to do it, that often works really well for me and I feel more empowered.
So it's called compromise, but you're not compromising the power of the break here.
No, what we are saying is you are compromising the boundary between the break and the off time. Whereas before we thought a break has to be a complete barrier away from work, we're saying not really. You can compromise those two domains and integrate them more.
So I asked people on LinkedIn about their methods for taking a break during the day. Jacob wrote, "Gym!" exclamation mark. I start my workday earlier, I finish later and take a nice chunk of time in the middle of the day to move my body. Gyms are too busy for my brain morning and night, and my brain is most fired up for thinking admin meetings at the bookends of the day. What category is this?
So there's three answers I have for that. The first is I love to hear gym, because regardless of what I'm telling you today, if the break involves any kind of physical activity, it's already a better kind of break. Under human sustainability, I would also call that the highest level of sustainability. We call that thriving, because that's someone who's figured out how to do preventative maintenance while also getting their job done. For these specific breaks, we would likely call that still a compromise strategy, because you are manipulating your schedule and you're manipulating your time time. You're saying, okay, I'm going to take time off here when others might expect me to work to take this break. But because of that, I feel more refreshed or I may work earlier. So we would still put that under compromise strategies.
Beautiful. The third strategy is used by the person that just takes the break. They're not hiding. They're not compromising. They're just taking it. So what can you tell us about this in terms of what drives it?
Not really a strategy per se, right? You're telling people, hey, I'm going to be out of the office for 3 days or I'm going to take a long break. The driver is status. Once people feel they have achieved a higher status, they feel comfortable doing that. That can be objective status. You've risen in the ranks and you are now a leader. But we also found some interesting instances of subjective status. In our interview data, we had an intern who felt that he was the greatest intern ever, and he had no problem telling people when he was taking breaks. In terms of outcomes, we assumed that overt breaking is the best. And what we found is it is fantastic for well-being. People like the ability to just say, I'm taking a break and I'm walking away. It did not move the needle on post-break performance. It didn't make your performance worse, but it also doesn't make it better.
Right. And what's the implications of this?
The implications of that is really the culture we want to set. And while I am not naturally a scholar of leadership, I usually like studying on-the-ground employees. So when it comes to our work on breaks, it really seems to be the case that leaders make all the difference. So knowing that you are the only one often in an organization that has reached the level of status where you can feel comfortable setting the tone about overt breaking and then also permitting things like compromise strategy really puts a lot of responsibility on you. And so I do a lot of these interviews because I think it's important to get the message out there that breaks are strategic. They don't undermine performance. They fuel it if you're really only looking at it as a dollars and cents decision. As a leader, taking overt breaks, role modeling that that's okay, telling your subordinates they can makes all the difference.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. I'm Lisa Leong. We're talking about taking breaks at work. My guest is Kira Shabram, Assistant Professor of Management and Organisation at the Pennsylvania State University. And I'd like to introduce you now to Vanessa Miles. She's an organisational psychologist from a group called Transitioning Well that works with businesses on mental health. Hello, Vanessa.
Hello. Lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
Vanessa, in your experience working with clients, can employees feel uncomfortable about taking breaks?
Absolutely. I think that a lot of people equate breaks with slacking. It might feel like you're letting your team down or people can't see you, you're not adding value, right? So there's a real sense that you just don't want to take the break. You don't want to look like you're not supporting your team members. And what Kira was talking about around those internal pressures, you feel like you are doing valuable work, right? So if you disappear from that, then what does that say about the work that you're achieving? So I think a lot of people have some barriers to taking breaks, and there's lots of things that we can do to try and reframe the purpose of breaks, and Kira's great work is certainly doing some of that work.
Vanessa, we did hear that leadership is so important here. So what are some practical steps that you've seen employers or leaders take to encourage break taking at work?
The main thing I would say is that if you're a leader, take your breaks loudly. If you are going for a walk after an important meeting, say that you're going for a walk to clear your head. If you need a little bit of space just to get some perspective, just say, I'm going to make a cup of tea. Who wants one? I need a clear head for this. So really take your breaks visibly so that other people can feel safe to do the same.
And Kira, what do we know about the most effective way to take breaks during a workday?
You know, as an academic, the answer I will give you is always one size does not fit all. So the way I would suggest you think about breaks is what is depleted? What are you trying to refill with that break? If I may take a slight detour, we often talk about research on burnout. Burnout has three symptoms: exhaustion, you feel like you can't keep going in the mornings, you feel like you can't even get out of bed. Inefficacy, things that used to come easy to you don't anymore. And cynicism, you feel this sense of alienation, you feel like, what's the point of it all? And so you can often use those symptoms as a way to pinpoint what kind of break you need. If it's exhaustion, give yourself permission for self-care. Often we feel we shouldn't be doing that. We should be doing even useful things during our break. But if it's exhaustion, go for a nice walk, take a yoga class, or just watch TV if you want to. If it's inefficacy, what we find is that self-care can work, but doing something nice for someone else can work as well. And the really important thing there is small things go a long way. We often feel like we need to do these grand gestures to help ourselves. We don't. leave someone a nice note, invite someone else out to go for a walk. If the issue is cynicism, you're starting to feel a sense of alienation, you are exhausted by the idea of being part of this workplace. Unfortunately, what we find is that if you're focusing on self-care in those instances, it can actually make it worse because you feel even more alienated. So using your break time to do nice things for others. So long story short, exhaustion, self-care. Cynicism, other care. Inefficacy, both of them work, and small gestures go a long way.
Let's talk about timing and duration of breaks then, because there's probably a lot of myths floating around. When it comes to breaks, is bigger better, Kira?
It depends on what you are trying to accomplish. So there's a lot of research now showing that even micro breaks really go a long way, again, when it comes to exhaustion. So having short breaks during the day where you're getting up, maybe you're timing it with going to the water cooler or to the bathroom, can be really restorative if you're exhausted. And there's even research looking into micro breaks as short as under 10 seconds, just Whoa. Switching your mindset.
Under 10 seconds. What would you do in under 10 seconds?
You know, again, these are my colleagues in the psychology department, but they basically gave people in experiments difficult work tasks and then just gave them 10 seconds to think about something fun or to plan their perfect meal. And even that kind of mental switch can be helpful. If you're looking for a transformational break, if you have decided the way things are going for me isn't working and every day is just the slog on the treadmill, then unfortunately, research seems to suggest the only way to have some sort of transformational experience where you can rethink, how should I change my life path? You have to do that off the treadmill. So that's when we start to look into research on really extended breaks like sabbaticals. So it really depends on what you're trying to accomplish. If it's exhaustion, mini breaks, especially early in the day and especially involving physical activity or social connection with people you enjoy. If it's transformational breaks, they need to be quite extensive, usually at least 3 months.
I want to troubleshoot something which we see being done quite often at the moment, and that is eating lunch at our desks. What would you say about that?
It depends. If it's a compromise strategy because you're trying to leave the office by 3 p.m. to go to your kid's rugby game, go for it. If it's a daily habit because you feel like you have to look busy, you don't want to look like a slacker, you don't want to feel like a slacker, then we've got a real problem because now it's a visibility strategy, right? You're not really taking a break. You're just sitting at your desk and neither recovering nor working.
Vanessa, what are the signs we should look out for that we actually need to take a break?
I think that there are really three categories of signs that we can think about. So the first one is cognitive. Am I losing my concentration? Am I finding it really difficult to problem solve? Am I finding it difficult to make decisions? The second one would be emotional. Am I finding my colleagues really irritating? Am I being a bit snappy? Am I just, you know, something's not quite right. I'm just frustrated. And then the third one would be physical, you know, headache, eye strain, something physical in your body that just doesn't feel right. Neck and shoulder strain would be another one.
And do you find that sometimes you're the last to know when you need a break, Vanessa?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're so good at seeing it in other people, aren't we? Not so great at diagnosing it in ourselves. And I guess that starts to tap into what are the strategies you can use to really identify early, right? So one of the things that you can do is what we call habit stacking. So every time you go to put the kettle on, you might do a quick body scan. So you might go like top to toe, head, shoulders, neck, back, hips, legs, feet, anything in there that I need to pay attention to. Just taking a couple of seconds, but the habit stacking is what actually encourages you to do it because it's anchored on something that you're doing already.
And can you give us some examples, good examples of people who've incorporated breaks into their workday that we might learn from?
Well, I think the first thing is I would look for the natural points in your day where it makes sense to take a break. So if you have a lot of meetings, at the end of every meeting, commit to, I'm going to take a 2-minute break. I'm going to stand up, do a quick stretch, or I'm going to go get a glass of water. If you are somebody who does not have those natural transitions in your day, commit to what makes sense for you. Is it at the 2-hour mark and the alarm's going to go off and you have to walk over to the other side of the room to turn it off? That in itself is a micro break. So thinking about what looks right in my day, and just coming back to what Kira was saying about autonomy, you get to make the decision about what makes a break successful for you. And I love the work of Jong de Jonge, who did some studies in Netherlands, who said you can choose which break to take. There are some, of course, that are better than others, but as long as it gives you joy, that's a really important part of it. So if it gives you joy to throw the ball to the dog for 20 minutes, do that. If it gives you joy to, you know, stop and read a book chapter, then that's the thing that might replenish you best.
Vanessa, my issue is that once I get into work, I just get lost in time, and then I find that I've forgotten to take any breaks whatsoever, but I also then realise that I'm completely stiff and sort of in quite a lot of pain by the end of the day. So what would you advise me to do to take breaks?
Look, getting into the zone, I mean, it's such a lovely feeling, right? We all love to get into the flow, and so we don't necessarily want to do something that disrupts that. So that is where it is so valuable to look at the natural transitions that are happening anyway.
Kira, what's your advice on taking breaks and what we do in our breaks?
Just agree with all of that. If I can add 2 points, one thing that hasn't come up yet is meetings. And I know those mainly apply to white collar work, and a lot of people groan when I talk about meetings. But I find meetings are a really helpful entry point into taking better breaks. If you're in a culture that permits it, think about how you can use that meeting time to accomplish some of those other recovery activities. Could you take that meeting while going for a walk? If your company permits it, or can you be the one who changes the culture, can you do a Zoom meeting while you're multitasking? We find that you actually pay better attention when you're knitting or you're doodling. And we often feel like, of course you can't do that, right? It would make you look terrible. But no, when my doctoral students do that, I love it because I know they're paying attention and they're doing something fun, so their brain is more turned on. So how can we turn meetings into something that could be more tolerable and, dare I say, even positive?
Thanks so much, both of you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Kira Shabram is an assistant professor of management and organisation at the Pennsylvania State University. Vanessa Miles is an organisational psychologist for Transitioning Well. Up next, try this. It's time for Try This Breaks Edition. Each week we get some tips and hacks for you to try and then ask you to report back on your progress. Vanessa Miles, organisational psychologist, what are your top tips for incorporating breaks at work?
All right, my first top tip is to start small. Take micro breaks. You don't have to go for half-hour walks every time you take a break. Just a short, frequent break of 2 to 3 minutes is effective too.
And your second thing for us to have a look at this week?
I want you to think about where is a natural point in your day where you might take a break. So it might be going to the bathroom, might be getting up to have a glass of water or ending a meeting. And try one of these things. Number one is try the HALT check-in. HALT stands for hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. So literally ask yourself these questions. Am I hungry? I didn't have breakfast this morning. Am I angry? Do I need to do something with that anger? Am I lonely? Did I forget to call my mum last night? Or am I tired? Yes, I watched that episode of Netflix last night, and that is the reason why I didn't get my 8 hours. So just do that really quick body scan and just see what is it that I might need in this moment. The other one is an actual body scan. Start from your head, go down to your toes, and just check. Is there any tension in my body? Is there something that needs to move? Do I need to do something different? One more thing you can try is a grounding exercise, the 5-4-3-2-1 exercise. What are 5 things that I can see right now? What are 4 things I can hear? 3 things that I can touch, 2 things that I can smell, and 1 thing that I can taste. Really simple, very quick. Choose one of those and let us know how you go.
And here's some advice you can try from listener Mel, who lives on the Sunshine Coast.
I make sure that when I have meetings, I schedule them for 25 minutes or 45 minutes so that I can have a break. In between, my calendar defaults to 25-minute meetings, which definitely makes it a lot easier. If I've got a longer meeting, then I'll aim to keep at least 30 minutes after that has finished free so that I can go for a walk or, you know, sit and reflect. The other things I put into my calendar are things like going to the gym, going to Pilates. I aim for a lunch break every day of at least 45 minutes where I do something that doesn't involve looking at a screen. I'll either read a book, I'll have a chat with my husband if he's at home. Hopefully that helps.
Thank you so much, Mel. Thanks so much, Vanessa.
Thanks, Lisa.
So try this advice on taking better breaks at work and report back to us in an email, thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Thanks for listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. It was produced by Michelle Weeks, mixed by Tim James and Ari Gross on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Melbourne. If you found this useful, please share this episode with others. You can do that on ABC Listen or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm Lisa Leong, and until next time, make sure you take a break.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.